In this episode of Startups for the Rest of Us, Mike and I discuss 50 mobile apps that we use to run our businesses. This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 164. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us, the podcast that helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at launching software products, whether you've built your first product or you're just thinking about it. I'm Rob.
And I'm Mike.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. What's the word this week, sir?
Well, I'm in the middle of a DDoS attack against my blog at the moment.
You're kidding me. What happened?
I have my blog hosted over at WP Engine. I think it was a couple of weeks ago where this first started happening. Today it got so bad that you just could not even get to the site. And I sent in a support request and they're like, yeah, it's still going on. There's really not much we can do about it, except we can change your IP address. So here's the new CNAME that you're going to need to use.
How interesting. And do you think it's targeting you or it's targeting you because you're on WP Engine? Yeah, I guess it's hard to tell, right? You just have no idea who's doing it or why.
I've got no idea. It's not like I've gotten any sort of, you know, extortion emails or anything like that. It's just, you know, nailed left and right, and there's really not a lot anybody can do about it.
So we are up to 311 worldwide iTunes reviews. We have some awesome reviews recently from Esoterica. She's in Australia. He or she's in Australia. Don't be fooled by the fact that these guys are developers. Startups to the Rest of Us is so much broader than that. The episodes are as regular as clockwork, both in their release and the killer content. Actionable and realistic information that will keep you motivated in your journey. Really appreciate that. Also, Layton in the U.S. says, I've listened to about 5 episodes so far, and I'm now going back and working my way through the older ones. I've already really enjoyed Rob and Mike's discussions and appreciate the valuable content they share. And then we have Penske, also from Australia. Love the fresh approach to your podcast, and that it's full of information that is useful to my everyday business. I find I can listen to you both all day long and still be as hooked at the end of the day as I was when I started. And to wrap us up, we have What's Up Dog LA, obviously from the United States. He says, I've never left a podcast review, but felt compelled to because I enjoyed this one so much. Just want to encourage Rob and Mike to keep doing what they're doing and say thank you, guys. So if you have not left us an iTunes review, please log into iTunes. We'd love a 5-star.
Very cool. Thanks, everybody.
So MicroConf 2014 in Las Vegas is coming up. We're just starting to get the details nailed down. Everything's still tentative, but we are talking to the Tropicana Hotel again, which is where we had it last year. And we have tentative dates in the middle of April. If you are interested in hanging around with 150 of your favorite web and mobile entrepreneurs, think about heading over to microconf.com and adding your email to that list. We sold out our tickets in about 51 hours last year. And from the size of the list at this point, it looks like it will be that fast or faster. So I would suggest that if you're thinking about coming to MicroConf, that you definitely head over to microconf.com and enter your email. So I heard you're a glass hole.
Yes, because I own a pair of Google Glass.
What do you think so far? How long have you owned it? I mean, tell us the story. Like, have you worn it out and about? Have people given you weird looks? Do you find that it's useful? I'm just curious to hear your take.
I've had it for almost 2 weeks now. It's interesting to use. So I find that it works really well if you have Wi-Fi or you have it connected to your phone, because it uses all of the different Google services. And I'll give you some examples of where I found that it was extremely useful. I was flying home about a week ago and I had them on in the airport. I was sitting down. I looked over at this TV screen that was on the wall and I'm like trying to find out where my flight was and whether it was on time or not. With Google Glass, you can either touch the side of it or you can look up and it will turn on. Well, I looked up enough because I was looking at the TV screen that it popped on and my flight information was right there. And it told me when it was taken off, that it was on time. I could have clicked on it and gotten more information about it, but it was awesome that like that information was just right there. It knew I was at the airport and knew that I had this flight coming up and that I presumably wanted information about it. I think I looked up on Google Maps on my desktop how to get to someplace. And then a short time later, I was wearing them. I just happened to glance up at something and like the map showed up and basically showed me the route that I had previously looked up on Google Maps.
Very nice. So sounds fairly useful. Have you worn them out and about and had people stare at you, or do you look like a dork when you're wearing them?
I probably look like a dork when I'm not wearing them. So I don't know if it really makes a whole lot of difference. Maybe it's an improvement. I've got no idea.
Touché, sir.
I definitely notice that people are looking at me. So I see a lot of people doing like a double take. I was at the grocery store the other day, and this kid, like, every time I turned around, he was, like, staring at me. So you definitely get looks here and there. I've had a few people who've asked me about them, just wanted to try them on and check them out. By and large, it's, you know, the people who are interested in it definitely want to try them out. And, you know, it's definitely interesting wearing them. I don't know how else to describe it. One thing I have noticed is that if you have an iPhone, it tends to be a lot less useful unless you're on Wi-Fi, because it doesn't integrate with the iOS GPS. That is something
That's
of a problem.
Problem.
They're supposedly working on it. I guess they've been saying that they've been working on it for the past 6 months. They don't have a solution for it yet. And then the other thing is that you can't send text messages through your phone if you have an iPhone. So it makes it a little bit more difficult for that as well. But if you do sync it with your phone, whenever you get high importance email through Gmail, it will ding, and then you can look up and you can just read the email right there. If you're using Gmail, like I said, if you're using Google services, it is extremely nice for that, because it does integrate with them, and it just shows you information like when it thinks that you want it, or when it seems to be relevant. I've had some tweets that have come in that just kind of showed up there, and they were marked as high priority, and primarily because I was mentioned in them or something like that. So I could go and take a look at them, and you can take pictures. It automatically syncs it with Google Plus and backs up everything. And then from Google Plus, you can share it with everybody.
I think the question on everyone's mind is, how has Google Glass helped you get AutoShark to launch?
I can almost give you an answer for that, is that with that, I could sit there looking at a screen, and I could do a Google Hangout, and I could walk somebody through it.
Very nice. I mean, I don't really have drip or hittail updates, just because it's almost Christmas and we're working away, but there's no, you know, major, we're just rolling out features for new customers as they're requested. And we have a plan of what we're doing in January, but really nothing new that I haven't already talked about. Anything new with AutoShark, new milestones you've hit?
Well, this week we crossed the 1,000 follower threshold for AutoShark on Twitter.
Hooray.
So pretty happy about that. The strategy that I've been using there has been working pretty well and seems to continue to be working. So I'm still working on how I'm going to monetize that, but I'm thinking it's more of a marketing channel than anything else. Just kind of get the word out to interact with people and, you know, get FaceTime, I guess. And then beyond that, I'm working on a bunch of different things for next month, more or less just marketing strategies. This week, we've got some more updates that are going into the software. We just put in some new reports. Once those are bug-free, I'm going to be going back to some of my early access customers and basically asking them for money, because those are the reports that they were looking for. But there's a couple bugs right now that we're just trying to straighten out.
Cool. And once that's done, you're going to be pushing forward with early access and additional customers and that kind of stuff?
Yep. A couple days from now, I've got a call with a reseller who wants to take a look at it and see how it might integrate into their business, and whether there's sort of a overlap or fit between what AutoShark does and what their customers need.
Very good. Well, hey, as we were sitting here talking, this documentary called The Startup Kids that I had mentioned a while back, it's been released. And it's a documentary about young web entrepreneurs in the U.S. and Europe. And it has interviews with the founders of Vimeo, SoundCloud, Kip, Indonero, Dropbox, FoodSpotting, and others. And you can check this out at thestartupkids.com.
On Twitter, Damon Klinkscales had sent me a tweet with, it was in regards to our predictions episode, and he sent me a YouTube video of what looked like a TED Talk where somebody was talking about all the different things that Google is doing, and it basically related very, very well to what I had predicted about companies essentially going down to the micro level and doing micro individual advertisements and feeding people different information. That aligned very, very well with what I said earlier about Google Glass, where it's like, I just look up and the information that was relevant to me was right there.
Right. So your prediction of kind of personal, behavioral, targeted marketing
has already come true.
Today, we're going to be diving into 50 mobile apps, mostly to run our business. Let's dive in here. We had an episode back in February of 2011. It's episode 37. We talked about the iOS apps that we were using. I listened back to that and realized that it was really out of date. You and I had just gotten iPhones maybe a year before, and there just wasn't that much out. And so a lot of things have changed since then. First thing I want to start with is my bottom four, and that's in quotes. So those are my apps that are along the bottom row of my iPhone. And for me, I obviously have the phone app. I have the Gmail app instead of the iOS Mail app. I have the Chrome app instead of Safari. And then I have the podcasts app because I listen to so many podcasts. How about you? I'm curious to hear what your bottom four are.
Well, I left mine to all of the defaults. So I just have, you know, the phone, and then I have the regular mail app, and then Safari and music, which I also think is the default. I'm curious to know why, you know, two things. One, why you switched out the iOS email client, and then why you also decided to just go with Chrome. Because for me, I don't really see any difference between Chrome and Safari on the iPhone. I know that there's some rudimentary differences here and there, but for the most part, Safari works well enough for me that it just doesn't matter.
Yeah. So the reason I have Gmail, let's start with that one. Gmail allows you more flexibility with labels. The labels actually work the way they're supposed to, unlike with the iOS mail app. The labels are colored the same way they are in the web app. Gmail also allows you to actually search your entire library. Like if you go to search and you type something in, it brings all of your historical emails back, whereas the iOS mail app only looks at what it has downloaded locally. You know, it's more of like an IMAP or a local version of the last 100 emails you have, whereas the Gmail app is just way, way more powerful. Like the search actually works just like the web version, and I wind up using that quite a bit. There are also more gestures that you can do that can get you between emails really quickly that I don't know if iOS has implemented or not. When the Gmail app came out, it was light years ahead of the iOS mail app.
With the iOS mail app, there's actually two different sections when you're looking at it. There's the basically if you have multiple, I guess, mailboxes set up, it'll show you the mailbox at the top, and then underneath it will show you your accounts. And under the accounts, if you need to search for things on the server, you can go in there and then you can search there. And what it will do is it will search your phone first, and then it will start searching on the server.
A, it didn't used to have that, and B, that still sounds like pretty clunky. Like you can't just hit the search thing at the top and type it in. You have to go searching for it through menus.
As I said, it's kind of similar to Safari where it's like, it's good enough. And plus I also have an Exchange server mailbox.
Yeah,
so
see, that's an issue. Yep. If you didn't have that, I don't know. I don't think the Gmail app would work with that, but I almost guarantee you, if you are on the iOS mail app and you switch over to the Gmail app for 1 week, that you will not go back to the iOS mail app. There's enough features and differences and swipes. There's all kinds of stuff you can do that if you learn it, it just makes you much more efficient.
Cool. Maybe I'll give it a shot.
And then the other question was about Chrome versus Safari. I switched to Chrome maybe a year ago. Safari crashed on me quite a bit. That was the original reason I switched. Tabbing was the other thing. This is, you know, now Safari on iOS has tabs. It didn't when I started. And there's a lot of really cool stuff you can do with tabs in the kind of multi-tab view of Chrome on iOS. If you just swipe one to the left, it disappears. You can reorder them. It feels faster as well, right? Just like on the actual desktop or a laptop. So that's why I've switched it. Again, it's just those, it's the little nuances. When Chrome came out on iOS, it was ahead of Safari. Safari may be catching up at this point.
Cool. Like I said, I'll probably give Chrome a shot again. I'll probably just swap it out on the bottom bar because I do have Chrome installed. I just don't generally use it.
Right. The other thing I like about Chrome is, you know, all your bookmarks are synced and all your open tabs. Like I can literally have open tabs on my MacBook Air. I can leave and wherever, if I'm out, I just click it and it'll say open tabs. I can click MacBook Air. It'll show me all the tabs that are open there and I can just pop them open or view them right there in the browser. So in case I was in the middle of something looking at a doc or looking at analytics or something, it pops right up.
Yeah, I use Xmarks for that, which is kind of in our next section of office and productivity utilities.
Indeed. So we have quite a few office and productivity apps. My first couple are Trello, which I use to manage my, obviously my Trello queue, my to-do list and stuff. And I really don't, sometimes I'll add things from my iPad or my iPhone, but most of the time I'm using it if I'm out and about and I want to read my to-do list and think about an item. If I'm going to add it, I will typically actually do that via email. I'll just pop open the Gmail app and type it in there and send to my Trello address.
Yeah, I also use Trello. Another one I use on the go is Evernote. I don't think you use Evernote, but that Evernote has the worst user interface that was ever designed and created, but millions and millions of people use it, which is kind of a weird way that it's gotten the success that it has. But I definitely use Evernote on my phone to take notes while I'm on the road because it allows me to throw them into different folders and be able to access pretty much my, you know, data repository of all the various marketing and sales things that I've run across over the years.
My next one is Google Drive, and this is basically, this allows me to access my Google Docs. I don't use Google Drive to store files, that I use Dropbox for that, but I do use Google Drive to access Google Docs, and I have frequently used it to actually pop open the outline for our podcasts and add things while I'm on the go. It was nice. Before they had this Google Drive app, it was pretty clunky to try to do it in the browser, and the Google Drive app actually makes it usable on an iOS device.
Yeah, I also use Google Drive, but I use Google Drive in combination with an app called QuickOffice. And QuickOffice is also from Google, but allows you to create documents, whereas Google Drive just allows you to access them, which is kind of nice because if you're using like an iPad or an iPhone, it makes it very easy to be able to pop it open, start writing a document, and then you can send it to your Google Drive later on so that you can get it to it from anywhere.
How cool. That is crazy. All right. I'm making a note to download that. I had never even heard of this.
Yeah, it's very nice. I've used QuickOffice a couple of times to write like entire blog posts on a plane just for my iPad.
Yeah, I can see that.
It's kind of nice.
Very cool. My next app is called Simple Note, and this is basically like Notepad, but it's synced across the cloud. And so it's much simpler to access and to open up a new doc and create one than like Google Drive is. And so I use it for a lot of things that I want to take quick notes about, like a shopping list. My wife and I sync up our shopping list through all of our, you know, web accounts and through our iPads and our iPhones. And then we also have some other docs that we've created that we collaborate on, like Christmas lists and that stuff, that's just a little harder to get to if you make them a Google Doc that you have to go in and search and of formatting and a lot of clicks. And the interface isn't as easy as Simple Note, which is basically just, like I said, a notepad. You know, it's like a little text editor.
That's really cool. I hadn't thought about being able to share lists and stuff like that between me and my wife. That's definitely a good one. I'll have to check that one out. I use a combination of SugarSync and Dropbox on my end for syncing files. SugarSync just recently said that they are moving to a paid-only model for obvious reasons. I mean, you don't necessarily want to be supporting a ton of free users, kind of similar to the way Dropbox has been. I mean, it just at some point it becomes financially unwieldy and unfeasible to support that many free users, especially when you're giving them disk space that actually does cost you money.
One more company. Remember, we've talked about this where it's like companies start with this freemium model and most of them get rid of it because of the pure burden of supporting it.
Yeah, so I do pay for a SugarSync subscription, but I also have a free Dropbox subscription, so I wonder how long it's going to be before that becomes no longer free. And I don't know at that point whether I would go with Dropbox or SugarSync. I mean, I use them both for different things. I have some stuff for one business in one place and then some stuff for another business in the other one. I don't necessarily like or dislike either one. It used to be that SugarSync, I thought, had a distinct advantage in that you could specify specific folders that were going to be in it as opposed to Dropbox, where everything was all in one folder and then kind of spidered out from there. But I think that that has gone away at this point so that they're much more on par in terms of features. So I don't necessarily have a strong preference either way. It's just, you know, whichever one makes it easier to get the job done and has all the files I need.
My next three apps are pretty standard, so I won't go into them too far. One is Dropbox, which you've already mentioned. The next is Skype. And the next one after that is Google Maps, which is a no-brainer. But I don't use the Apple Maps. I just like the routing of Google Maps. And now that it has turn-by-turn directions, it's a no-brainer for me. And then the fourth one, which is a little different, is called Sunrise. And it's a calendaring app that has, I'll say it has a better UI than the iOS calendar app. So if you're counting, I pretty much use none of the stock iOS apps. And I've actually heard this is a pretty common thing that a lot of people use more Google apps and or just replacements for the iOS apps. And I think this is a real problem for them. I mean, I know they want to make the money from their hardware, but if they can't kind of write the core software for their operating system the best, you know, better than other people, I think that's definitely something that Apple needs to work on. But Sunrise is something you should check out. It's a free app.
A couple of the other apps that I have in the office and productivity section is Basecamp, but I already mentioned that I use Xmarks for synchronizing some of my bookmarks. So, I use an application called Viber, which I think I used that primarily when we were at MicroConf Europe, because what it allows you to do is it allows you to send text messages through Viber to somebody else who has it and across nothing but a Wi-Fi connection. So that was helpful for me because I have an iPhone and my wife has one, and I just downloaded Viber and we were able to text each other back and forth without me having to pick up a phone or trying to get on Skype. And it was just nice to be able to just leave messages. The other ones that I have are an application called DocScan, which I use for scanning receipts. So if I'm out on the road and I'm trying to track expenses for a client, what I can do is when I go out to dinner, when I get the check, I sign the bill and then I just take a picture of it with DocScan. And at the end of that week-long engagement or whatever, I can just then take that, convert it into a PDF, send it off to my bookkeeper, and my bookkeeper can take that PDF, fill out, you know, the expense report, and then send an invoice to the customers so that I don't necessarily have to deal with it. And that's worked out really, really well. I've been using DocScan for, I think it's probably 2 years, and I basically use it all the time. And then the last one I use is something from Nathan Berry called Commit. And Commit allows you to put in a goal that you have and something that you want to do or accomplish every day. And it'll you just enter in a time that you want it to remind you whether or not you've done that or not. And all it is it's just a button. You say whether or not you've done that on that particular day. And it allows you to go back one day, but it helps you to commit to different goals or at least trying to reach different goals. So for example, if you want to lose weight, you might say, you know, did I go to the gym today? And you just say yes or no, whether or not you did it on any given day. And it tracks how long you've been doing whatever that action was. So it kind of helps to motivate you, because if you've done it for, you know, 30 days or 60 days, you don't necessarily want to break that cycle. So it's something of a psychological help.
Our next category is financial apps. It looks like we have four of them. One of them is just your banking app. If you're part of even small credit unions these days, they have an app, especially the, you know, the large like Wells Fargo and Bank of America and large national banks will have them. The cool part that I found about my banking app is not just that I can check balances and transfer money, but I can now deposit checks just by taking a picture of the check using the app, and it scans the numbers and imports the whole thing. So I almost never go to the ATM anymore, only to pull out cash these days. And that's been a big time saver for me. And my other financial app that I use is called Paid. And I've mentioned it in the past, but it's basically a Stripe iOS app. It's not put out by Stripe. It's a third party, but they integrate with Stripe and they can pull down all your data and they have some really attractive reports. The design work was done by Ryan Scherf, which is your friend and mine. He's a great designer up in Minneapolis. He's done a lot of design work for me. So the app looks really sharp and it gives you a lot of insight into kind of, you know, when your next transfer is coming and how much it's going to be and what your revenue's been and your per customer. I mean, it just gives you kind of a bunch of metrics on your iPhone. And the app, I think, is like $4 or $5. And the other cool thing is that if you are doing live customer development, say at a conference, you can just punch someone's credit card number into Paid and you could charge, you know, a certain amount of money on it if you are, in fact, going to do pre-selling.
Two others that I use. I also use a banking app from my credit union, and you're right. It's absolutely nice to be able to just take a picture of a check and just have it deposited automatically. The other two apps that I use are Xero, is X-E-R-O, and that integrates in with the Xero accounting application. So I've started moving a lot of my accounting stuff and consolidating it for my businesses all onto one platform, and it looks like Xero is going to be that platform. So I've started using that, and then the other app is the American Express app. So I use that to check balances or make payments or whatever.
Well, it seems like I need to download the Xero app because I use Xero and I don't have the iOS app. Our next category is commerce. And this isn't necessarily stuff we use to run our businesses, but we wanted to include it anyways because I use this, the first one, the Amazon Store app. I use that every day, every other day to order a crazy amount of stuff. And while I don't use it to run my business, what I do use it to do is save time. Since I have Amazon Prime and I can get everything in 2 days, I'm constantly just popping it in to this Amazon app right on the fly. And since you don't need to combine your orders because you have Prime, right? The other app I have under commerce is my Starbucks app. Now, here's the interesting thing. I don't actually go to Starbucks that much, but what I like about this is twofold. One, I hate those rewards cards. And I go to Starbucks enough that every few months I'd probably earn a free coffee. But this app, if you pay with the Starbucks app, it gives you that free coffee, right? It tracks it for you, so you don't have to carry around that extra card, because I'm Mr. Thin Wallet. I'm trying to get a really thin wallet. The other thing I like about the app is that there have been a couple times where I've left my wallet somewhere and I have no money and I'm super hungry. You can add money to it. You can store value on it like it's a card. And it basically bailed me out, because there's always a Starbucks around. And I went there and I got one of their sandwiches, but at least I had something, you know, without my wallet. And it was kind of my emergency fund, I've realized, if I'm stranded or out and about somewhere, that I can always pick up a little bit of food if I've forgotten it.
Yeah, I primarily use the Amazon store app to, you know, hunt for different things. I also use the eBay app. So if I'm looking, doing price comparisons, or if I'm looking for something that's hard to find, between those two, I can usually find just about anything for my phone. And then I also have the Starbucks app, and I also have the Dunkin' Donuts app, because if you've ever been to the New England area, there's a Dunkin' Donuts on like every single corner. It's just crazy out here.
All right, our next category is social. First app that I use for social stuff is Hootsuite, and that's what I use to manage my multiple Twitter accounts. And what I like about it has the swiping left to right of your different threads or your different searches or your different things that you're looking at. So you can go through not only multiple Twitter accounts where you're getting mentioned, but you can have an embedded search. So anytime anyone mentions MicroConf throughout the year, that's just one of my tabs that I'm swiping through. So Hootsuite's a definite winner for me. It's a free app, and Hootsuite's free as well, unless you're over, you know, a certain level of usage, which I'm not. The other couple are the Facebook app, which I use pretty infrequently. I'm not on Facebook that much. Then there's the Kickstarter app. I talk enough about checking out Kickstarter stuff that, yes, I actually have checked it out on my phone. It's quite a good experience. I actually like the experience a little more on my phone and iPad than I do on the desktop web version. And then the last one is Yelp, obviously good for finding a place to eat when you're somewhere you don't know.
Yeah, I use an app called Urban Spoon on occasion to find new places to eat. I don't use the Yelp app. I also have Hootsuite, and then I use the regular Twitter iOS app. I use that one primarily for my single founder account, and then the other ones I'll kind of manage a little bit here and there through Hootsuite. But I don't tend to use Hootsuite on my phone nearly as much as I do on my desktop. Most of the ones overlap with yours. I also use Facebook, but usually when I'm sitting in an airport.
Our next category is media, and so this is books, music, movies, and TV. My first one is Audible, but I listen to probably a couple audiobooks per month, and I used to sync them via iTunes. I used to download them to the laptop and then sync it over through iTunes and listen to it on the music app, but I realized it was just such a better experience to be able to download it directly over Wi-Fi, and once Audible had all the controls and the 1.5 and the 2x speed, it made sense just to do that, and now I'm actually completely free of iTunes. I don't use iTunes on my desktop for anything. So my podcasts are through my iOS podcast app. Audible handles my audiobooks. And I tried using iCloud and uploaded everything. It scans through and it does the iTunes match and stuff. And it was quite buggy for me. Even I'm on a MacBook Air, and about maybe 50, 60% of the time I'd go to play music, it just wouldn't let me play it. And it would blank out and I'd have to reboot the machine. I switched over to, this is another app on my phone, but I now use the Amazon Cloud Player. And it's the same basic thing as iTunes Match. It's just using Amazon's technology. So I had to, you know, have all my music scanned again by Amazon. It matched everything and it uploaded whatever else I didn't have. You can have up to 250,000 tracks in the cloud for like $25 a year. And I think I have 5,000 or 10,000 tracks. It's not that many. And so now that is what I use to manage all my music, which feels good. I think it's an Adobe Air app, Amazon Cloud Player on the desktop, but their web player is decent and the iOS player is decent. And it got me away from using iTunes, which has just been an aggravation for me for years. Like everyone, I use the Kindle app. I use Pandora for ambiance music. I like Pandora a lot for music discovery. The Netflix app and the Hulu Plus app, as well as Amazon Instant Video. And those are the three ways, since I don't have cable and haven't had it for years, those are the three ways that I watch TV shows. A lot of them, you know, are either streamed for free or I have premium memberships to all those. And I'm able to, you know, rent movies for $2 or $3 and can either watch them on my phone or my iPad or my laptop computer anytime I want, or through the Roku, frankly. And then the last one is Flixster. And this is what I use when I'm out and about. I want to find out where's the nearest movie theater playing this movie and what are the times. It's that GPS, you know, but modern smart devices where it just knows where you are and it can tell you the nearest theaters and what's playing. It really is an advancement in modern science that I think we take for granted.
Yeah, of those apps, I have the Kindle app installed, but I almost never open it up anymore because I bought a Kindle Paperwhite last year. And since then, I almost never use it on my phone anymore. I only use it on my Kindle. So, and I mostly read books. I don't, like, if it's a business book, I'll read it on there. But I have a bunch of websites where I have the Kindle for Chrome plugin where I can send something to my Kindle and then read it later, which is kind of nice. And just having that bigger screen is probably what really does it in for the Kindle on the iPhone. I also have Netflix on my phone. I have Hulu Plus. I have Amazon Instant Video. But I also have HBO Go. My wife and I are actually looking at getting rid of cable between Netflix and Hulu Plus and Amazon Instant Video. It'll probably basically replace cable. But the one thing that I probably won't be able to keep is HBO. So I don't know what I'll do when the next season of Game of Thrones comes out.
Yeah, that's the one thing. The HBO shows can't buy them on Amazon and iTunes until the DVDs come out, which is like 9 months after they air. Our last official category are utilities. And my first one in utilities is, you know, password management. So LastPass or 1Pass or 1Pass. These are all things that help you have really exotic, long passwords and being able to log into them on any device. Highly recommend if you're not using one already to take the plunge and do it. It's definitely changed my relationships with passwords and actually my relationship with, I used to have that guilt of like, oh man, I know I'm not as secure as I need to be in, the LastPass, 1Pass group. They really make me feel like I'm more secure than I used to be, frankly. Then we have FTP on the go, which is the FTP client. If by, you know, some absolute emergency I need to FTP in, and I have done this a few times, like while at a conference. I also have the 2x client RDP, which is just a remote desktop connector, and it'll get into a server. So, you know, say the Hittail server or another Windows server where you need a remote desktop in. It's a no-brainer. It's not great to do on an iPhone because the screen's so small, but I do have it on the iPad as well. And again, only in emergencies, you know, I've had to log in and kind of switch something real quick. Another couple are TurboScan, which is basically just a scanner. And so you can take a picture with your iPhone and it'll scan the document in as a, you know, a PDF or a JPEG or a GIF. And I've used that to email it to people so I don't have to go find a real scanner. And then there's White Noise Plus, which I use when I'm at a hotel. If there's a lot of noise, especially if we're there with my kids and I think it's going to wake them up, I'll just turn on, you know, the inside of an airplane noise or some type of white or brown noise. Last couple for me in utilities are the Roku app, which is just a remote control for a Roku, which allows you to watch internet television on your TV. And there's Quick Reader, which is from our own Patrick Thompson at Inkstone Software, which helps you learn how to speed read better. And the last one is Air Display, which allows your iPad to basically be a second monitor over Wi-Fi. So you can, it's great for coffee shops if you really need to compare an Excel spreadsheet or something and you're working on two monitors. It's not super fast, super responsive, so you wouldn't want to really be flipping back and forth a lot. But if you're just trying to compare data or you just want that extra little 10-inch screen sitting next to you, it also chews through battery, actually. But if you do need that, I have definitely used this on occasion.
I think out of those, one I would definitely add is I use something called ISSH, which is very similar to what you talked about with the RDP, where if you need to SSH into a machine and it's an absolute emergency and it can't wait for you to get to a laptop, then that's a good option. But I also have an RDP client so that I can get into my servers if I need to. And yeah, password management tools, you know, similar to LastPass or some of those other ones that you mentioned. You said TurboScan. I think I mentioned it before. I use DocScan for that. How does TurboScan work?
You just take one, maybe two pictures of the document and it just scans it in and just spits out a JPEG. It can do PDFs. And actually, I just looked at it and it said you can just do the basic camera, then you can do the SureScan 3X, and that's where you take three pictures of it and it like merges them and makes completely sure that you have a really high quality image of it. It like doubles them up over each other.
Yeah, I think it's $3, but DocScan is $3 as well. So.
Right.
Well, that's a lot of different apps that we've just covered, and hopefully we went through and helped you guys discover a couple of new apps that you'd never heard of. I definitely got a couple of off of Rob's list that I'm going to take a look at. If you have a question for us, you can call it into our voicemail number at 1-888-801-9690, or you can email it to us at questions@startupsforrestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. You can subscribe to us on iTunes by searching for Startups or by us RSS at startupstherestofus.com, where you'll also find a full transcript of each episode. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.